all that matters is... Wrong!
This town deserves a better class.
Heavy Metal Podcast.
I'm gonna get a...
If you do not listen, then the hell with you.
Walk through the gate of consciousness. Stop, love, drop from under you.
I started out with a top 10 list and Ryan was like, that's boring and dumb. And I was like, you're fucking right. So I think we came up with something a little bit better. So first up in our sort of questions here, I was asking you, in keeping with the theme of the podcast, for your top four Sabbath albums.
All right. Number one for me, it's Bloody Sabbath. Ooh. That's my hot spicy take. That is my number one album.
We got a prog head in there.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Much as I love the metal, that was the thing that really, I think, sold me on Sabbath. When you hear the heavy tone and the really harrowing and kind of dark vocals of some of the other stuff, you go, okay, that's Sabbath. Then you hear Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, and it's just so proggy and different and light and yet still with a heaviness to it that's hard to kind of quantify.
Yep.
That for me is just, it's a masterpiece. I think it's a fucking masterpiece. It's my favorite record.
I love that fucking record. And I think it's their best. It's not my favorite, but I do think it's their best. Rye, what's up? What is it? Number one.
I'm going to have to go with the Riff Luddite stuff here. Master of Reality is my number one, because there's absolutely no cuts from it. It's, like, there's nothing that I could even cut. Is that what we decided on?
Sophie, which one of these children would you like to cut from this album?
But I will say these four albums are interchangeable. They have all hit my number one at some time.
Yeah.
During my journey.
But
Master of Reality has, I don't know. Yeah, it's probably spent the most time at number one. Because I just think about even like having the cassette as like a kid is one of the first things that I like bought a Sabbath thing.
There is something about that. That's probably why my number one, not surprisingly, is Volume 4. I went with my favorite just because that's the first independent, that's the first Sabbath CD that I bought on my own that was like, I like that cover. I'm going to listen to that. And it was different. It was totally different. And then Ryan, I remember Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, listening to that and being like late at night, putting the CD on after I'd bought it and being like, I don't expect much from this because it's late Sabbath and nobody talks about it, you know, at that point, because there wasn't an internet. And it was like, holy fuck, you know, this is incredible music. Why haven't I heard any of this on the radio? I've heard none of this.
Because they play Paranoid and War Pigs and that is it. Occasionally, Iron Man. Occasionally, if you get a DJ that's like on his way out the door, play Sweet Leaf, but that's gonna be
right. It's all the first.
Well, recently I heard they played Tomorrow's Dream because it was the 40th anniversary or whatever.
I love that.
And I was like, oh, like just a midday play while I'm at work on
that is bold,
the
sir.
Radio.
That is bold.
I was very, very satisfied that day.
Why
are you so happy?
I heard a song that I've heard 45,000 times again,
but it was on the radio.
Ryan, what's your number two?
Number two is the OG Black Sabbath.
I can't knock that, but
it's hard. It's hard not to put that in the lineup for me. And Rye, I'll echo you. I all of these, if you ask me tomorrow, in fact, I think this will probably change. It's hard. It's really hard for me to nail these down because they're so fluid and depends on my mood. It depends on what's going on. It depends on which album I've been listening to for repeat, you know, for the last 6 days. But Black Sabbath for me is always, I think just, it's a fucking icon. And I know we're going to do a thing later on where you do make me drop one of these songs, and I refuse to do it. I will not do it for this album because every...
You don't have to do it for that album. You can
I'm not going to do it for this album. Because every single song is necessary. It's necessary. And I think if you don't relent and you make me do it anyway, I'll probably say Evil Woman because...
Evil Woman would disagree.
Yeah. Evil Woman would very much disagree. Yeah. And especially so the rest when it of the takes band. The place of Wicked World.
Exactly. So,
yeah,
exactly.
So you just jump to the American version in your
phone. Yeah, perfect. That's the first Sabbath song is Wicked World. Like that's the one that like started it. That was their song.
It's so good too. Yeah.
Fucking great song.
Oh, and like Behind the Wall of Sleep. Oh, fucking
Sleeping Village. Little
Sleeping Village. Yeah.
Sleeping Village.
Red sun rising in the sky. Village, cockles cry, soft breeze blowing in the trees, peace of mind, feel a
I'm not a big covers guy, and so I don't really care for Evil Woman. And Warning to me, like there's parts of it where I'm like, yeah, but because it has that, the Sleeping Village into just like as a whole, it's
absolutely
fantastic. It's one of those albums that like, yeah, it doesn't. I'll do a spoiler here. It doesn't crack my top four today, but it always when I listen to it, I'm like, that's number one. You know, I just haven't listened to it for a while.
I find myself listening to it more than most of the other albums. I think I go back to that one a lot. I go back to Black Sabbath a ton, and just in recent years anyway. All right, Ryan, what's your number two?
My number two is Volume 4.
Okay,
and this one has been my number one since doing the podcast. That like going into it, I was thinking like, yeah, it's like Master of Reality, Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. Those are like the ones that like I loved as a kid. And those are the ones that had the coolest covers on Nativity in Black and stuff. But when I got to Volume 4 and just like the apex of the fucking closer. Like,
yeah, every day.
That's, yeah. Fucking Under the Sun is heavy. When I was talking about heavy, you know, like that cannot be matched again.
No.
It got there. I guess you can be Conan and you can play stuff that's technically heavier, but it's never heavier than fucking Under the Sun. No,
dude. And it's such a great, and I love it too, just because to me, it redeems the stuff about, you know, the stuff on Master that I don't dig, which is the After Forever stuff, that it's like, it goes back to that. Like, don't fucking tell me what to do. Just don't tell me what to do. You know what I mean? Like, you don't get to do that. And I don't fucking want you to, but
he's responding to a situation.
I know he is. I know he's telling that to the Satanist guys. Satanists that are fucking trying to stab his guitarist. I know that. I still hate the fucking lyrics.
Same. Are we related or what?
I know, right?
Oh god.
But my
After Forever is fucking brilliant. I love After Forever.
That's an immediate drop song for me.
Uh-oh.
I would too. No, I would too. All of a sudden
you're dropping me from the call.
Yeah, I was going to say all of a sudden.
I get where you guys come from, but you got it like musically, that song.
Oh, it's great. No doubt about it.
Great riff.
It's great.
Tremendous riff. You'll never hear me say anything about that song sonically.
It's Geezer's best bass line, in my opinion. It's the way he flows in there is sick. Just sick. But I get what you're saying. Like, you can get turned off by the content if you're taking those lyrics.
It's just really so hard.
But it's this, know. You know, just stands out
like it's so like not just, Sabbath okay. to me. It's just like it sounds so
even when Biohazard covers it.
My number two is Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. Gotta go with Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. You know, I love that. Yeah. The story, we always kind of think of Ozzy because he didn't write the lyrics. He wrote some of them. He would start lyrics and he, you know, whatever. Obviously, Geezer wrote most of them. He would collaborate on them or whatever. But like, we think of him as like, you know, and Tony goes around and says this shit, which is not true, which everybody knows isn't true. Where he's like, well, he couldn't sing across the melody, you know, and then Ronnie came in, he could sing across the melody and it was amazing. It's like, that's not true. Ozzy fucking does that all the time. He fucking harmonizes with himself on Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. On Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, and then when he walked in and saw the story about him walking in and seeing the orchestra that had been brought in and turned around and left because he was like, that can't be Sabbath. This is, I'm in the wrong place.
It's a great story. Yeah.
It's just the perfect Ozzy story. But then I found out that the ending, the spiral architect, all those chord changes, that's Ozzy telling the orchestra how it goes by going, and it goes like this. And then,
yeah, like, Ed, you know, who probably told that story was Geezer, right? Because that's what I always find. It's like, mm-hmm. Geezer has such a respect for Ozzy, yep. And he's the one who's like writing the lyrics for him. He's the one that would probably should be the most pissed off with him because he's doing all the heavy lifting for him. Yeah. But he respects that melody and stuff. Iommi just gets butthurt at certain times, you know, like, right. I think the business comes into that because they are the ones, them and I mean, Ozzy and Sharon and Iommi are the ones battling for the name, right. Than anything.
Yeah. And but they've been nasty to one another.
Yeah, they there's some so like you're getting quotes things. That might be in zones when they were nastier to each other. They seem like they're peaches and cream right now, but
well, they're all fucking millionaires now.
Yeah, I was gonna say they have nothing to complain about.
To me, Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath is seeing them go. I mean, they're inventing so much new stuff. I think, you know, on Sabotage, they're really going to perfect what thrash is going to sound like on Symptom of the Universe, you know, that riff and that sound, and they're still creating stuff. Like, they could have just stayed in that doom band thing. And the reason why I love Volume 4 is because you can see them transition into something else. And all of a sudden there's all of that orchestration and there's just, you know, it's Spiral Architect is crazy the way it ends. It's like a fucking, it's like Sergeant Pepper at the end, you know, it's just this amazing, like, what is going on here? It's a total mind fuck. And the lyrics are goddamn amazing. Anyway, but so Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath is my second. Ryan, what's yours?
So I'm on number three now. Number three for me.
Right. Number three. That's what I meant.
Sabotage.
Sabotage.
So that was a good segue. It's funny when you were talking about, you know, Ozzy not getting credit for writing songs and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think about the writ.
Yep.
Right. I mean, the writ is perhaps my favorite Sabbath song. And I think it's so profound and it's so angry and it's so virulent. Ozzy is just pouring his heart out. And it's one of the purest expressions of him as a songwriter. And I love it.
Yeah.
Because it's the first time I really feel like he gets to sit down and have something to really say about it. And it's super successful.
Yeah.
I love that album, if for no other reason than for that little tidbit, that little thing where Ozzy gets to shine in that moment as a songwriter.
Yeah.
But I also love that record. Just, I think this is one of the other reasons that really drew me back to Sabbath, hearing Symptom of the Universe covered by Sepultura. That first time I heard that, oh man, that blew the doors off. Somehow it's still heavier than Sepultura's, and it just blows me away.
I remember hearing Sepultura version first.
Yep.
And then I heard I heard the Sabbath version, and I was like, there are lyrics to this part? Like, I had no idea that there was actually, I thought it was just a little, you know, musical outro, and then oh fuck yeah Ozzy's singing on this part.
So that's
just
me.
An
that's
absolute fucking banshee on that song. It's insane.
Oh my god, it is
amazing. Ozzy is on that.
It's incredible. And it's a great moment where all of a sudden they're like, we can play the heaviest shit in the world. Here's a little flamingo guitar, and you know, and Ozzy can just, I mean, Ozzy's range on Sabotage is unreal. It's unreal.
Astronomical.
Yeah.
It's hard to picture it now considering he's singing the key of Talk. But it's there was a time when that motherfucker could just belt it out.
He hasn't missed a note since like Osmosis, and it's not because he's gotten better at pitch. Ryan,
he's
what's
on.
Your
he's on.
What is your what is your
my numero trois? That would be. I'm going with an old stinker here. I'm going with Paranoid.
I'm glad the A side is
played to shit, but come on, guys, it's played to shit for a reason. And the B side is incredible.
It's incredible.
Incredible.
Incredible. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And it's like, I'm glad you did because I felt bad for leaving it off mine. I was like, how am I leaving fucking Paranoid off? Yeah. Paranoid is like, it's DNA.
Mm-hmm.
It's just DNA, and it's everywhere. You can't escape that. You're absolutely right. The A side, probably the most important, like four songs in metal, maybe.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah, absolutely. And like, as much as like Paranoid in particular is like overplayed, Warpigs it still works every time. For me, Iron Man. Oh my god, it's just like perfection. But that B side is just so strong.
It is.
I mean, even though you do have like a drum solo in there, but I love it in the positioning of it. Yeah. It's just like, it really works in that side, especially right next to Hand of Doom like that. Like there's a showcase of the bass in that vibe. It just, and one of the greatest closers, probably second only to Under the Sun, but
right.
The Dire's Wear Boots is fucking killer.
That's great. And it's such a
so much swing. Nothing swings like Various swing doesn't swing like fucking
absolutely
Various Wear Boots.
And you know what? It's them being so prescient because they're like, hey, fuck the fascists, right? It's about them getting in a fight with skinheads, yeah. So it's like, yeah, you guys are so 2022, you're fucking woke.
Don't ever do that again, man.
I won't. I actually feel really gross about myself. No, I agree, man.
They're Bible thumpers on the next album, but
I know,
exactly.
I know. That B-side's absolutely brilliant. Hand of Doom took me a long time because I was just like, this is so slow. But once I, you know, gained a little bit more patience and realized how much, you know, when I was a kid, it was like, Warpigs is cool. I don't really get what's going on with Hand of Doom. I like the one where the robot comes back from the future and kills everybody, you know. But as I got older, I was like, it's heroin and Vietnam and like
growing up, you and I didn't know what heroin was. That's why it didn't resonate. We're like,
wait, you guys are Pacific Northwest. You didn't know what heroin was?
No. I was 10, right? It has to be like in the conversation. So I'm glad you put it in. Let's see. My third is Black Sabbath. My third's the debut. Although, again, all three of those top three, Volume 4, Bloody Sabbath, and Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath are all like my heart. And I was sort of surprised myself with number four. I there were two that I could have picked that would have surprised me, but I'll go to you, Ryan. What's your number four?
Number four is Volume 4.
Perfect.
I couldn't, I didn't put any zingers in here. There's no real spicy takes. I feel like this is a pretty safe list. You know, again, come talk to me in a couple of weeks and maybe Tech Eck is up in number three spot or something.
Well, I probably won't come talk to you then.
Yeah, probably a good idea.
Yeah.
No, Volume 4. The thing about this one for me is that Sabbath Records have, especially when you listen to all of them now that they've been out for years, and you've got sort of a sense of what they are, you've got a sense of the stories they tell, you've got a sense of the sort of the sonic area in which they live. Volume 4 has always felt to me like it lives in a very different place than a lot of the other records. There's a much drier production on, and it doesn't quite sound as maybe as crisp and as deep as some of the other recordings, but there's something about that I find very charming. Mm-hmm.
Very inconsistent too. It's almost like,
yeah,
especially like, I mean, you hear the remastered version now, Super Deluxe, they've kind of evened it up a bit more, but
right.
I remember like when I first listened to it and like Cornucopia comes in, I'm like, is my speaker?
Yeah. What changed? Like, what is this?
They're clipping like, I'm like, but they're clipping in an awesome way, but what the fuck's going on? Yeah. The dynamics are all over the place and in a sloppy kind of way, but it
works. Absolutely. And it's such a diverse record. Like
you hear new things in that one all the time, more so than anything else. I find
I didn't realize new things every listen. Yeah. For a long, long time, I didn't realize that was the first one they had made outside of England.
Right.
And knowing that now going, you know, I didn't realize they were climbing Mount
Kenya. You can know a thing and still not have it really sink in, right? Like you don't get the implication of that. You don't understand what that really means.
Yeah. But
when you hear it now in that context, it makes perfect sense that it sounds like this. And I just think that what's interesting about it for me is that it goes from, you know, a band that could theoretically just sustain their trajectory with the kind of production that they have on their music. And they take a real sonic, I feel like, kind of a leap by almost stepping backwards. They had an opportunity to just keep making the same sound over and over again. And they didn't. They chose something really different. And I love that about Volume 4. On top of the fact that the songs are fucking brilliant. Yep. I love that it just occupies a little bit of a different headspace than a lot of their other work.
That's, to me too, it's my Wheels of Confusion is my favorite opener. I love the ending of it. I love this, you know, the Straightener, as much as they were probably not responsible for that title, but like the opening sound of Iommi's guitar is just like heartache. Mm-hmm. It's just heartache. Yeah, fucking, it's like, you guys, you've made it and you're surrounded by piles of cocaine and cars, and you open up this album and it's just weeping.
So fucking sad.
It's amazing. It's fucking amazing.
The fact that the album can have like the effects in the middle of it and it still works.
Yeah.
You know, like they're just fucking around in a lot of it, and like, but you just hear the room. You hear the
absolutely. Place. I mean, on FX, you literally hear the room. Like, I know that FX is like one of those things where you kind of go, "What are we doing?
What are we doing here?"
But it is also, once you know that it's them fucking naked running around and banging their crosses on the thing, it's just like, yeah, that's what this album is. And maybe it's similar, right, to the way you feel about Born Again. You know that there's that.
There is that. Yeah,
you feel the energy coming through.
Yep.
Music.
I do feel that on Born Again to an extent too, and it did take kind of reading a lot more for that one, because with Volume 4 you almost hear it before you even know it. I find
right.
That album always sounded kind of different. Druggy to me, you know. I'm like, there's actually a quote about it's about Caius, actually. I think John Garcia said it before, mm-hmm. from Caius, but he was talking about like how Caius's sound is like Black Sabbath sounds very like indoors for the most part, but mm-hmm. Caius sounds outdoors.
Totally.
But I think Volume 4 kind of has like, it kind of jumps out onto the patio a little bit, and like
Laguna Sunrise, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. It just feels like you're in the area as opposed to like the studio.
And cool.
Great. Which is
that's
amazing.
Such a great analogy. Oh my God.
It's such a cool quote from Garcia. It actually makes complete sense, because like when you hear Volume 4 and the tones in that, they do carry through that to that desert scene.
Yep.
It fits in with that zone. I think that's probably one of the most influential albums that scene, as much as Master of Reality is like the weed worship is in there and that thing feeds mm-hmm. that, but Volume 4 really inspires that experimental, let's get weird in the desert kind of.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever connected it, but I think I can draw a straight line from Volume 4 to Songs for the Deaf. Like in my head, I go, oh,
100%.
We'll be right back.
Ecstasy, Valium, Vicodin, marijuana,
ecstasy, and alcohol. Rise number four.
Oh, we're on number four for me. So Sabbath Bloody Sabbath gets in here.
There we go.
Again, this is one that's jumped to number one. I named my podcast after it.
That's right.
You know you like something when you name your podcast after it. But yeah, just an incredible, a bold move for them. Because so apparently that's when like the riffs dried up, apparently, after volume four and some of the touring that they were doing. Everybody's burnt out and they had nothing. And they went into that like haunted castle. And then these juggernaut riffs came out. But then there's also like these weird like honky tonk things going on. Yeah. And like some of the riffs just swing so hard. National Acrobat is like beyond groovy. Like that and Supernaut are just like the funkiest, grooviest, awesomest, sexiest. I love them.
We were Ryan and I were sitting around talking, having drinks the other night a while ago. And we said something about, you know, if you had to pick one Sabbath song, and Ryan's like, we love the same albums, but for opposite reasons. We'll be like, oh my God, this song, I love it because of this song. I'd be like, I fucking hate that song. I skip that one every time. You know what I mean? But like, we both love that album. And we were saying like, we just, tastes are so different. Like, what's your favorite Sabbath song right now? And Ryan's like, it's not going to be the same thing. He goes, National Acrobat. And I was like, so is mine. It's like, I knew that we both liked the song, but I had no idea that it was like,
it's pinnacle. It's pinnacle Sabbath.
Yeah. I love that song so much.
Do they call it that because it swings so hard? Like, that's what I was like, acrobat swinging. Funny. And it just,
great
like
question.
I was, that's just like,
fucking funny.
It sounds like almost like a demo name for something, like, oh, that's the acrobat there swinging.
Yeah.
Right. Like how Will's going like this. Bollocks. Yeah. Because, yeah. Part of it is about, that's the one where Ozzy tells the story about Geezer calling him up and going, okay, I've got these lyrics. And or maybe it's Spiral Architect, where he calls him up and he's like, he reads him the lyrics, and Ozzy's like, put the phone down, get over here, whatever it is that you're smoking, let's do it together, you know what I mean?
That's like, when he gets into the sperm and the embryo and all that stuff.
Yeah,
we can't not talk about Spiral Architect and how incredible that is for their trajectory moving forward. I mean, like, that's where you can see a lot of people like will cut off, they'll cut off Tech X as like this weird outlier thing, but there's a natural progression, I find.
Absolutely.
And it carries through Sabotage as well. Some of the deeper cuts in Sabotage have those proggy kind of elements coming in.
And it has that kind of, to me, that great AM radio feel. Like, and I don't
say
that. I don't say that as a negative. Like, there are songs like on Never Say Die and on Tech X that have that sort of like, God, I wish I was listening to this in a truck from the 70s on an AM radio.
Yes, it's the strings, man. It's got like that Laurel Canyon kind of like,
totally. Like, absolutely.
Like, yeah. Psych. It's got some psych in it too.
My fourth, I think it's my fourth, right?
Yeah, Gina.
Yep.
My fourth is Sabotage as well. I love that. It was actually a choice. I'm going to get burned alive by people between Sabotage and Never Say Die. I love Never Say Die.
Number five for me is Never Say Die as well.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm the same, man. It's like,
and then it's the debut. Yeah. Should we just do our top 10? No, we're fine. There's enough like
podcast that never
looks like
ended.
The only difference was me sneaking Paranoid in there, right? Like,
yep.
Other than that, we're all on the same.
We're pretty close. We're pretty close. Yeah.
And like 2/3 of us are named Rye. So I mean, there's that as
it's
well.
Like Kismet, yeah. Baby.
And 2/3 of us are related. So
who knows, man? Can I, you guys want to adopt me? I wish I had cool brothers like you. I'm an only child.
Oh. See, that's
so I had to get my like that's why I got into Sabbath for my dad's record collection. Come on, like I need an older brother.
Yep.
And yet in my case, it was my younger brother that made me listen to Sabbath. So
I don't think you say that, but I really do not know that that's true. I don't know that happened.
I was into Ozzy. You were into Sabbath. And it wasn't until you kept hammering on, dude, Sabbath is, I remember in high school, you were just going on and on about volume four to the point where I got sick of listening to you talk about it, to be perfectly honest with you.
That's how my listeners feel. That's my listeners. Yeah.
Most of them.
And that's it for the material that made it off the floor. Everything else is lost to history. except this.
I have so much other stuff that I was going to get to. I also had a game that I was going to play with you guys called Sabbath Bloody Knuckles, where I was going to make you think of like Sabbath at their physical peak fighting another band. Ooh. And like which band would win.
Oh.
No, I'm not kidding you. Listen to this.
Matt Pike. He'd win every time.
Matt Pike wins every fight. But like, this is how detailed I got. I got so into it that I listed the, like, cause I was figuring out like angle, like I was listing the heights, not only of Black Sabbath, Iommi's 6 foot, Ozzy's 5'10", Geezer's 6 foot, Bill's 5'8", but then like AC/DC. And like, if you go with the Bon Scott era versus Bon Scott's 5'8", Brian Johnson's 5'5". So you're talking about reach. You know, you're talking about
like, you are tailor made to have a podcast. You just like this is your fucking calling.
On the next episode, I am going to give Black Sabbath the and volume for all treatment. We're going to look at the first 8 albums, the original lineup from the debut all the way to Never Say Die. So come back in a week or two when I go black. And I never go back. Until Born Again. Honestly, then I'm out. On the next, and volume for all.
Music to life.